Yes. Hello, this is Glenn Krause, creator and founder of Course EDI. On today's podcast, we'd like to share some information, some thoughts and comments about CDI programs and the return on investment and financial returns that programs in general are bringing to their facilities. Just recently, I was having a conversation with a colleague CFO who has a program that's been up and running and he considers very successful in terms of return on investment, financial performance. So I asked him a few questions, which was the reason why I come up with this concept of sharing some ideas and thoughts. Want to get people thinking about today's processes of CDI programs and how successful we are compared to what we can be doing in terms of helping our hospital, helping physicians, helping the patients receive the best care possible and the most appropriate level of care. So let's take a look at today's CDI programs. As I've always thought of and as discussed in previous podcasts, CDI programs are primarily focused on the query process for the main purpose of querying physicians for additional diagnosis or clinical clarification of additional diagnosis or diagnosis that are not in the chart, but there are clinical validation items or elements in the chart with a potential diagnosis. Things like acute respiratory insufficiency versus failure, change in mental status versus metabolic encephalopathy, sepsis versus simple UTI, and so forth. So today's programs are primarily judged based on case mix increase. Case mix increases are, of course, obviously a factor of relative weights, types of cases that we clarify and receive additional information about an additional diagnosis or a more specific diagnosis, increasing the DRG relative weight and goes into the factoring of the case mix index per month. Unfortunately, people have a thought as this should be the standard in terms of how to judge these financial performance and outcomes of CDI. Keep in mind, though, that case mix index is a variable term. It's just a number representing gross case mix index, gross revenue. What do I mean by that? It means that we just because we build a particular case in a certain way does not necessarily mean that we get paid for the same DRG that we bill. We're all too familiar with clinical validation denials, which I'll go into in just a minute. DRG down codes based on interpretation of coding guidelines by third-party payers and their contract companies involved in cost containment for the third-party payer. So in essence, our case mix index is really not a valid and reliable measure of our performance. So what I want to go over today is my thoughts on, okay, what is the true financial performance of a CDI program when you take into account a few variables that I'll outline that we are not taking into account as an industry. So let's start with CDI program cost. Okay, obviously there's a cost to running any initiative in the hospital, and CDI programs are no different. Excuse me. So what we have is CDI salaries and ancillary staff salaries. CDI coordinators, CDI educators, coding educators associated with the CDI program. So there are specific salaries for the CDI specialists and the ancillary staff. If we have new CDI specialists, there's additional cost involved in training until they become up to snuff and speed in terms of reviewing cases by themselves in an expedient fashion, meeting the standard of 25 records a day, so forth and so on. Now we have to take into account our salary and benefits. So if the average salary, let's say, is $75,000, you have to add 30% for benefits, vacation, sick time, health insurance, terribly expensive. So we're talking about $97,500. Let's round it off to $100,000. Okay, now there's 2,080 hours in a work year, But we don't work 2,080 hours because we have sick days, we have vacation days, we have vacations, we have off-site training, maybe go to the HEMA conference or the ACTUS National Conference or the state chapter meeting or webinars and so forth and so on. Then we have our consulting fees. If we have consultants who are coming in once a year or coming in to supposedly revitalize our program. And we also have staff training. That's, as I mentioned, new employees, CEUs, allowances, webinars, position training that we spend. We're not reviewing records. We're investing in the education of our physicians. We have software. We have the encoder. We have all this sophisticated bells and whistles software that's seeming to take hold in the CDI programs to enhance efficiency and chart review, identify the cases with the most opportunity for documentation improvement, i.e., most opportunity for reimbursement enhancement, which I'm okay with if it's done in the right way. Okay, so right off the bat, we have program cost. Then we have our denials and medical necessity denials, clinical validation denials, DRG downcodes. These are very costly, and there's some linkage or relationship between CDI and clinical validation denials. We know that our third-party payers and the cost containment companies and so forth, particularly managed Medicare and commercial payers, don't want to pay for care. Their job is not to pay them fairly oftentimes for the care provided, quality focused care. So they'll refute a diagnosis like encephalopathy, acute respiratory failure, pneumonia, heart failure, malnutrition is a big one. So these denials, because we are not getting complete and accurate clinical facts, information, and contacts, we're not doing a very good job of, generally speaking, getting the documentation or communication of patient care to the extent it's clearly and consistently, concisely, and contextually correct, describing, showing, telling, reflecting, depicting, portraying the acuity of the patient to support the diagnosis that we're querying for, or the information necessary for demonstrating the level of care in the inpatient setting. What happens is we get denials. These denials are very, very costly. They cost us from a standpoint of people, resources, time, as I go into. And when we talk about appeals and denials, we have to really frame that in terms of our cost to collect. What do I mean by cost to collect? That means once the patient is discharged, we have the record coded by coding professionals. We may have a scrubber that identifies cases that may not make sense, or there may be some issues of compliance. Maybe a diagnosis may be missing that we overlooked based on treatment, so we have to go back and look at the case. We may have delays in discharge, not final billed, because we have a diagnosis that appears once in the chart. I call that fleeing diagnoses. Now you see it, now you don't. And then the coder slows down the process, rightfully so, by querying the physician for clarification. Or we may have a case that says rule out for sepsis, but it wasn't specifically ruled out or ruled in. So we have a delay in billing because of discharge not final billed. Well, that increases our cost to collect because of time value of money. But once we get our denial because of insufficient or inconsistent information, or not generating a clear, concise picture of the patient's acuity, beginning the ER, we may get a medical necessity denial concurrent, or maybe post payment. What that does is increase our appeals cost. Because now we have more cases to appeal. We have to copy the record in if it's a Medicare or managed Medicare. Again, we have costs involved in appealing, whether it's resources, physical resources, or staff to do the appeals, type the letter, send out the postage, okay, with no guarantee of payment. Medicare has 5 levels of appeal, and we start out with redetermination. The next is reconsideration. And if we lose on the reconsideration appeals process, then it goes to administrative law judge. The backup is still 1.5 to 2 years. So, and once we lose at the reconsideration level, then the MAC will recoup our money. So we provided excellent care. We have no payment for that particular care. Now we're spending money to get back the money we had. And if we take into account the time value of money, not only the cost to appeal, but the time value. So let's say the case is a chest pain, an observation is $2,275, and an inpatient may be $7,000 or $8,000, depending on our blended rate, could be more. So the money that, let's say we appeal on the administrative law judge level, and we win the appeal, then we have to wait for the MAC to pay us for that care. And after 2 years and all the costs involved, not only in waiting but appealing, that $7,000 is not worth $7,000 2 years from now. That's money we could have invested in the stock market, although the stock market is tanking, or we can invest in our plant, buy new equipment. The fact is we don't have the money, but we incur the expense. Excuse me. Then we have rebilling. If we rebill a case because we agree with the determination by the payer, what costs us a few dollars to rebill electronically through the clearinghouse, but there's also cost every time a record is touched for rebilling, there's a minimum cost of $25. So we have to take that into account for our CDI program. Then we may have an outside vendor who's helping us with our appeals, or administrative law judge appeals. Those are very costly. We may be a facility that a small facility and don't have the wherewithal or bandwidth or knowledge, or you may be getting a large academic medical center. We have lots of denials and appeals that we have to do, and so we contract with an outside vendor. So that increases our cost to collect. So that's just a few of the items. Now let's take a look at UR cost. Because the CDI can be doing a much more robust job of improving the quality and convenience of documentation, I know firsthand, working closely with UR case management department, that oftentimes what should be an inpatient, it meets Interqual or Milliman care guidelines, or is a straight Medicare patient, and the patient's acuity based on the diagnosis certainly warrant an inpatient admission. Unfortunately, the facts, information, context that we get starting in the ER and progressing to the H&P do not show that sick patient true clinical picture of acuity. How short was it? Short, the patient comes in with chest pain and shortness of breath. It needs to be well described in the history of present illness. There's 8 elements of a history of present illness, and I haven't come across many programs that really focus on that particular piece of the admission as part of the CDI program. So let's take a look at adverse level of care determinations. There's a tremendous difference in net patient revenue from an inpatient versus observation. If it's a Medicare patient, average APC for composite APC is about $2,275 versus $7,000 or $8,000 for an inpatient for the same type of care in the same setting. Big difference, and so there's a tremendous big net patient revenue difference that we can be driving down specifically through a renewed focus on documentation integrity, beginning with the ER, not just focusing on diagnosis. That's what I'm seeing. A lot of CDI programs are, not a lot, but some are seeing the value of CDI in the ER. Unfortunately, they're focusing only on diagnosis without impacting any change, measurable change, in the quality of documentation. Then we have to take into account physician advisor costs. So let's say our case management UR staff send in the record to the insurance for approval, commercial or managed Medicare, And we get a notice that their insurer will only pay for observation. Okay, observation may be a per diem cost, reimbursement of maybe $1,500, $2,000 a day, not the same as an inpatient. So we have to pay a physician advisor to negotiate, do a peer-to-peer. So we're paying someone's salary that could have been avoided with more robust, as I mentioned, effective communication of patient care. So that's another cost we have to take into account. So let's look at the entire picture of CDI program. We're only focusing on, as I mentioned, primarily case mix index. Case mix index is a gross number, as I mentioned, and that should not be any way how we judge the success of the CDI program. We need to really be taking a hard look at what is our cost, what is our opportunity cost because of our focus primarily on diagnoses reporting and DRG shifts, clarification of severity of illness, risk of mortality, which is very important, obviously, but we must not lose track of the communication of patient care. We have to back out our cost for clinical validation appeals, medical necessity appeals, factor in our cost to collect, then our UR cost, opportunity cost, due to not doing a tremendous job on moving the needle in terms of documentation integrity. Factor in all these, and I'm pretty confident in saying our CDI programs are not as effective as we build them to be. And I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm trying to be honest and a realist. So what am I trying to get across, or what should we be doing with this information of my thoughts and comments? First of all, I believe in competency in saying it's time to really renew our focus on CDI. We call ourselves clinical documentation improvement. The movement is towards integrity. Integrity means documentation of the need for hospital-level care from the time the patient presents to the ER until the time of decision to admit the patient to the hospital as an inpatient or observation. What was going on in the physician's clinical judgment and medical decision-making that led he or she to believe the hospital-level care as an inpatient versus observation is the way to go? For Two Midnight Wool, is there a reasonable expectation based on what the doctor know clinically and documented in the chart? This is a piece we need to be focusing on. In terms of our progress notes, I highly recommend that we get away from this drop, grab, and run. We drop a query, get a diagnosis from the physician, grab the diagnosis, run to our software to take credit for that, and don't do much to ensure carrying forward of that diagnosis that are clinically valid and relevant throughout the entire stay, including the discharge summary. It's really, in my mind, taking a hard look, as I said, about our present processes and recognize the urgent need to redirect, reformulate, rebrand, and revisit our vision of CDI to establish a vision that inspires physicians to want to participate as willing participants versus targets of queries. So, the homework I like to give is to say, okay, let's look at our CDI program, take a look at our medical necessity denials and clinical validation denials, see how many of these that we've actually touched as a CDI specialist and left a query or perhaps didn't leave a query but had that opportunity to interact with a physician for clarification of the facts, information, and context of the record, and then reformulate and develop a plan to change the status of what we're doing. This is a great starting point, particularly with the OIG's announcement last month about their concern of upcoding and miscoding of DRGs. We should take that additional work plan very seriously because I believe some hospitals, based on their aggressiveness of querying and for diagnosis, are going to be found left with their pants off. Okay? So please, take a moment to reflect on my message here and decide what's the best avenue to revamp our programs. Okay? So thanks for listening. We hope this has been helpful. My next podcast, I'm going to be outlining what I feel to be the standard of KPIs, key performance indicators, to measure success of our program that are valid, reliable, meaningful, and really demonstrate the power of CDI and how we can enhance the communication of patient care, both for the physician, the patient, all the ancillary stakeholders, such as you are in case management, that are totally dependent upon the record and its content to fulfill their obligation to help the patient move along the continuum in the right setting, and also obviously help the physician demonstrate cost-effective, medically necessary, outcomes-based patient-centered care, okay? So you have a good day. Thanks for listening, and be good.